Today's program has been brought to you by Le Creuset. Visit Le Creuset for cast iron and stainless cookware, bakeware, pots, pans, and kitchen and bar tools. For more information, visit www.lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Short and hot with Chef Family.
Short and hot with Chef Family.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, coming to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We are on heritageradionetwork.org for episode number 21. And joining me in the studio today is my dear friend and restaurant business extraordinaire, Matt Wang. Hi, Matt.
Hello, Chef Emily.
How are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Matt and I know each other. We've known each other for a long time, and we're good buds. But he's also here because he is very funny, and I'm hoping that he's going to offer some... He said he's going to be the Robin to my Howard.
Sure.
But the thing that I have to confess is that I have never heard an episode of Howard Stern.
I've listened to enough of it for just about the entire world.
Okay, so you're comfortable. I assume I feel like I'm going to get made fun of, right? You're going to balance my ego.
Maybe. Okay. Maybe a little.
Which I think the listeners can say I probably could use, and I think the show is better when I have someone to talk to anyway.
Yes.
So this weekend, in an effort to make everything about my life better. And there's other parts of this that we're going to get to in terms of looking outside of yourself to make your life better. But specifically, in order to do my job better, I bought a brand new computer.
And because consumer items are what makes you better, without question.
Well, so here's the thing. I want to do my job better. And this is a tool. And so I've gone through a lot of justification, but I also felt really cool when I opened the box, so it did feel good, and it hasn't worn off yet, except I'm terrified that I'm going to lose it or drop it or spill coffee on it. And so
it's a good machine, and you bought a really nice one, and don't break it.
I'm not going to break it. I was scared to take it out of the box. I just sat on the kitchen table in our dining room for 2 hours, and Mark was crawling the walls. He's like, I can't believe you haven't opened it yet. If I was you, I would have had you drive home so I could open it in the car. I was like, I think I'm just going to play Plants vs. Zombies for a solid 24 hours just to get used to having it.
You aren't actually touching it. You're more putting your hands near it and sort of looking at it lovingly.
I'm almost 35, and I've never owned a laptop before. I've had employers who have let me borrow theirs, but this is the first one that I actually own. And so one of the things that I'm going to try doing while we're talking on air is I'm going to try live tweeting.
So I'll vamp while you are distracted by your beautiful new computer.
Okay, yeah, that's probably good. So Matt, you have a long history in the restaurant industry. So tell me in 5 sentences how you found yourself in the restaurant world.
When I was a kid, I worked in nightclubs. When I was 16, I had my own night at a nightclub in my neighborhood, and I thought I wanted to do that for a living. I thought I wanted to be in the music business, but I realized I wanted to be in the hospitality business because I liked all the people coming. That was the fun part.
Right.
So from there, I've just kind of done nothing else professionally for almost 15 years.
So you're a lifer.
I'm a lifer.
So we were talking earlier about the difference between being a lifer and coming to it later in life, which is my story, where I put it off as long as possible until it was sort of an inevitable thing to do. And then now here I am, but I'm not in the restaurant industry in the same way that you are. I talk behind a microphone.
Right. Well, you also don't have the battle scars to show for it.
I just burned myself the other day making...
Behind a microphone? How do you burn yourself behind a microphone?
No, in my home kitchen. I was like, ow! And now I feel like I'm cool again because I have one of the oven rack scars.
Yeah. Well, I work in the business, but I don't cook either. Well, haven't professionally for a really long time. And I'm the same way. When you get it burned, it's like, oh yeah, I remember what that's like.
Right. I tell people who take my cooking classes to look around, particularly in the summer when everyone's not covered up by sleeves, to see who's got the scars and the knife rolls. And you know, oh yeah, you're a chef.
Yeah.
So if you secretly want to run away to culinary school, there's someone you might want to talk to, or they'll try to talk you out of it.
And if you're a really vain chef, you're worried that it'll fuck up your tattoos.
Yes, which is how you spent your money this weekend, right?
About a week ago, I got a new tattoo. That's just a thing I do. My wife and I went and got new tattoos.
Is it?
Just something I've been doing for a while. I don't know.
I love that. So I'm trying to stop wringing my hands about getting a tattoo, and you know this because I've been talking to you
for a couple years about it.
For a couple of years. And my friend Althea has posted on Facebook, I think only once, but it really struck home. It was like a BuzzFeed thing of things that tattooed people are sick of hearing from not tattooed people, which is like, did it hurt? And it's like, yeah. And like, yeah. What are you going to do when you're 60?
Yeah, but one of them was care.
Yeah, one of them was like the person who your friend who doesn't have a tattoo who's still wringing their hands about it, and you're tired of telling them to just shut up.
There was an interesting article in the Times over the weekend about sort of the existential thought about getting tattoos and generationally why our generation was okay with saying fuck you to the future versus the boomers who had long hair and could cut it off.
Right,
it was really interesting because it was about seeing your future self and understanding that not only are you recognizing when you didn't care, but you don't care that you then care. So you're sort of recognizing what's going to happen, but you still don't even care about that. So you're really giving the middle finger on every level.
And it's definitely a permanence thing that I'm scared of. I'm never going to have a job where I have to worry about covering my tattoos. Like, it's never going to happen. I almost got a job in an office where it almost happened, and then it didn't because I came to my senses. I was like, I will be unemployed again in 6 months because this is not going to make me happy. I want to be around people who don't care. And yet I still haven't done it. And it's the permanence that scares me. And I say that as someone who has had a child.
Which is not that permanent.
And that's crazy. Like, that makes me feel like a crazy person because of course he's permanent. He's just part of my life. And I can't believe he hasn't been here the whole time. And yet, in terms of getting a tattoo, I know exactly what I want. I know exactly where I want it. And I went so far as this weekend to go to the tattoo parlor to talk to the guy. And instead, I bought a computer. And so now I have to earn a little bit more money again and go back and have that conversation again.
Yes. Yeah. Just
but
do that's it.
But it takes money to make money, which is what I put on Facebook. So
I've been getting tattoos since just about the moment I turned 18.
I pierced my nose the moment I turned 18, but I could take it out.
So, and still even I like get excited and nervous when I get tattoos. And it took me a long time to get to commit to being a tattoo guy. Like,
that's part of it. I think it's going to break the seal is that once I get one, then it's going to be all these other ones that I've thought were interesting ideas that I'm just going to start getting. And then I'd be a person with tattoos.
Yeah. A tattoo person.
Right. So I've made a lot of dramatic changes in my life, and I look back on every one of them and think, that was the right thing. Like, I went to culinary school, and that was the right thing to do, to walk away from all of the other stuff that I'd, you know, masters and all of that stuff. Going to culinary school was the best idea I ever made.
And it was much more expensive than getting a tattoo.
I know, but Sally Mae paid for that, and so I don't really, you know.
Sally.
So speaking of the New York Times, a couple of weeks ago, they published an infographic about adulterated olive oil that I wanted to touch on because I was in Home Goods this weekend trying to find a rug for. We have a space in our house called the mudroom, and it's the little antechamber that you walk into before you get into the house proper where all of the like boots and things pile up.
Notable because it's full of small cooking machines.
Yeah. Yes, because the kitchen itself was built before appliances were a thing that you would keep on your counter. And so there, the cabinet to countertop space is like a half an inch too short to get my appliances where they should be. Yeah. So they have to live in the mudroom. It's a very tight space. It's also covered in mud, which is a problem because then ultimately the mud gets checked in the house. So I went to Home Goods to get a rug. And while I was there, I also bought that's a whole other story. But I bought a bottle of California olive oil. And while I was being wrung out, I got the question of the week from a woman who I think is now a listener. So if you're listening from the Home Goods in East Hanover, welcome to Sharp and Hot. but her question was, what's the deal with all the different types of olive oil? She was very charming and funny. And she's like, what's the difference? Like, what's extra virgin? What's pure? And I had just seen this infographic. Oh, you vamp. I'm going to tweet the link.
Well, all right, wait. I will say, being a disciple of Mario Batali's, mm-hmm. I only keep extra virgin olive oil in my house.
Italian extra virgin olive oil.
Not necessarily Italian, but only extra virgin olive oil. And I cook with it. I do everything with it. And that's the way it's been forever.
Okay.
When we were living in Brooklyn before we went to Philadelphia, we were members of the Park Slope Food Co-op, and you could get Frantoia, which is a really nice olive oil for cheap. So that was just sort of our house brand.
Okay.
So I don't really believe in like light and pure and all that other stuff at home.
Do they actually mean anything? Is there any legal stuff behind it that says if you're going to call yourself light, you have to meet these legal standards?
And I'm going to botch them, so whatever pedants out there about olive oil, please send Emily all of your complaints.
ChefEmily@sharpenhot.com.
So there's something about the extra virgin is supposed to be the first pressing without heat added. Because there's all this these tricks to expelling olive oil, adding heat, adding different chemicals, letting it rest for certain amounts of time. And extra virgin is supposed to have none of those additions to help with expelling the olive oil. It's the purest expression of the fruit.
Okay.
And then virgin or whatever the next is the secondary pressing. And then light is something, it's some level in terms of when they have a whole batch of the recently expelled oil, light is like the top portion of it or something. I'm completely screwing this up. But there are things to it. But all that being said, it's kind of a bootleg thing, as we've discovered from the New York Times.
Right.
So all of that is kind of crap.
Okay. So, I mean, when I saw light in the supermarket for the first time, which was probably 5 or 6 years ago, I assumed that it was some sort of marketing campaign about the low-calorie craze.
I think that's what it was. It was a reference to the weight or the average volume or whatever of the oil itself. But when the light diet craze started, they started using it to their advantage. The word light.
I got it. Okay, so the word light pre-existed the dietary.
I believe so.
Okay.
Again, we Chef Emily at Sharpenhot.com.
Yeah, that's me. So there's something even more sinister that is happening that I have been following. And this has sort of been known... It's been known for a long time that Italy is the biggest importer of olives. That Italian olive oil can be labeled Italian olive oil if the fruit arrives in Italy and it's pressed and bottled in Italy. It can say product of Italy,
right,
even if the fruit doesn't come from Italy.
As someone who, as a portion of his work, buys olive oil, we've always known that most of the fruit's coming from like Tunisia and Israel and all over the place, and it's just handled in Italy, and that's sort of the clearinghouse that makes it Italian.
And do you think there's anything? Is there anything inherently bad about that?
No, it's great stuff. The trick of the trade has been for a while. Actually, I'm not sure if this is the case anymore, but when I first started buying olive oil in the business. Not the olive oil business, the restaurant business, the Genco Olive Oil Company. we knew that you could get great olive oil from Greece that was cheaper than the Italian stuff and sometimes better quality.
So the Italian is just the, like, you get to say it's Italian. It has a cachet because it's Italian.
Yeah, it's like Italian leather. You know, it's there's an inherent value in just knowing that it's from Italy.
It gets even more sinister.
Sketchy, if you will.
Sketchier. If the fruit becomes rancid in transit, there is evidence to suggest, I have to cross all my libel lawsuit opportunities off here. There's evidence to suggest that there are makers and manufacturers of olive oil who are in Italy accepting this fruit for a lower cost and pressing the fruit, even though it's rancid, and using a reverse osmosis procedure, much like Dasani uses in tap water to make it Dasani, that will neutralize the olive oil. And so all of the bad smells and bad taste and everything is gone from the product. And then they add back in a small amount of olive oil to give it the right color, the right smell, the right flavor, and then bulk that up with a non-olive oil like soybean or canola, and then bottle it and sell it to American consumers at a premium.
You know what we should do? We should go to Colavita in New Jersey. They're really nice guys. New Jersey, that's where they bring everything in, all their pastas and their vinegars and their oils, and they repackage them in Jersey. And I've been there. It's great. And the people
and they're like
it,
a real family business,
yeah,
Colavita,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Oh, they're great people. They're really, really nice. And they would probably have a lot to say about this topic.
We should totally go there.
Field trip.
Okay, we could do that. So, yeah, I mean, and the truth is that neither Matt nor I are an expert on this But based on what is out in the other sources of media, there's enough to raise my eyebrow that I've as a listener, I would be thinking, what can I possibly do? My quick solution has been to buy California olive oil, because California has a climate that can grow olive trees. It's made in the United States, and then I can buy it not at Italian olive oil prices. It's still kind of a premium product, which is why I got it at Home Goods. but I feel like there's some FDA, Department of Agriculture oversight yeah. that doesn't exist in the international market. But you had another solution.
Well, my solution was I had a 15-liter cube of Cordo olive oil that was sent to me that lived under my desk for a long time.
So if someone doesn't know what that is, like a 15-cube
it's a bag in box. So it's a bag of – you buy a lot of bulk vinegars and a lot of Asian products come in it. It's literally like a bag full of – a bladder full of liquid
that's
with a spigot on it.
The box itself is about, what, 18 inches?
Yeah,
18 inches
square.
Okay.
And I started using this olive oil at my house, and it's really, really good. And the company's called Cordo, and I read sort of as a reflection of this infographic in the Times, somebody put out a list of the most reputable olive oils that you can buy, and Cordo was on it. And I fully endorse them because, A, they gave me free olive oil.
I'm tweeting it right now.
And, B, it's so, so good. And I'm upset because my stock of it has run out.
Well, I just looked up on Amazon. It is not ridiculously expensive. You don't have to buy it in an 18-inch by 18-inch by 18-inch cube. You can buy it in bottles, like a civilian. but if you were to buy it in that quantity, how long will it last in a regular? You know, if someone just stuck it on the shelf in the pantry.
I mean, it's airtight, so it'll last for a while. Olive oil, its quality depreciates exponentially as soon as it's pressed. When I worked at a restaurant that had a good relationship with the company DeVero, which is another great, great California olive oil company. And we used to get immediately shipped olive oil just as it was immediately off of the press. So it would come in these clear plastic jugs, and it looked like antifreeze. It was neon green.
Yeah.
And it was so strong you could barely touch it.
One of the coolest culinary experiences I had was when I was between my freshman and sophomore year of art school, I went to Italy to study painting mm-hmm. and drawing, because at 18, I was like, this is what my life is going to be like. I'm going to go to Italy in the summer and draw. And it was great. We went to a restaurant that they were pressing the olives in the restaurant as like part of the show. And then they would like pull the oil from the container and deliver it straight to your table. And it was that amazing color. The problem is, and this is true of a lot of my European traveling, which happened when I was younger. And as I said last week, didn't care what American Express thought of my credit score. I was able to drink at 18, and so I don't remember a lot of it because the wine was delicious and it was so celebratory, and I didn't have a whole lot of experience moderating my drinking. So if I'd paid more attention, I would be able to tell you more about that meal,
right.
But that's the only thing I remember. There are fried artichokes too, I think, which would be very characteristic of Southern Italian.
In September, October, you can go to good shops and get Novello. Some of the companies call them Novello, and some of them call them Novella, mm-hmm. the new press olive oils that are immediately bottled and shipped.
What's good chops?
Good shops.
Oh, like good shops.
Good chops.
Right. Okay, so we have to take a break. But what I want to end on is that I think the moral of the story is don't buy your Italian olive oil in a not good shop, like your big supermarket.
Yeah. Or find a brand you like and stick with it.
But the Colavita is available in the supermarket. I think we should go there.
We should.
We should ask them some tough questions.
Really lovely people.
All right. Awesome. We'll be back after this.
Well, come on.
You are listening to All Night Long by the California Honey Drops, only on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Is brought to you by the generous support of Le Creuset. Respect for tradition and authenticity has been Le Creuset's guiding principle since 1925. Yet, their innovative designs and exceptional quality ensure that they remain relevant today. The company began in 1925 when a casting specialist and an enameling expert opened their foundries at the crossroads of transportation routes for iron, coke, and sand. That same year, the first French oven was produced, laying the foundation for what is now an extensive range of cookware and kitchen utensils. Today, Le Creuset provides the finest quality stainless steel, stoneware, silicon, enamel-on-steel, textiles, and forge-hard anodized aluminum, as well as the colorful line of cast iron cookware. Visit LeCreuset.com and shop the full line of cookware, stoneware, bakeware, kitchen tools, wine accessories, and more. Heritage Radio Network thanks Le Creuset for their generous support. Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson. With me in the studio is my guest co-host, Matt Wang. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Emily.
So we answered a listener question about olive oil before the break, and I wanted to let you know that if you have questions, you can reach me at chefemily@sharpandhot.com. You can go to facebook.com/sharpandhot and message me there. You can tweet me at Chef Emily P, and you can call 862-242-8599 and leave a message on the designated voicemail, and then we'll play your voice back over the air.
Does that spell anything? Is it?
You know, I went through a lot of trying to make it spell something, and no, it's just the number that I got from Optimum.
866-SHARP-HOT.
No, that's taken. Every permutation is taken, and then on top of that, it's like if you want your own, then you have to buy it from someone, like a domain name. I tried to buy EmilyPeterson.com, and a lady in Oregon had already bought it for her infant daughter, and she wants $1,500 for it. And I said, no, thank you, so I bought Chef Emily Peterson instead.
There you go.
Problem solved. Before the break, we talked. We did some name dropping of brands. We don't get any money from these people, but if they should hear this and they want to become sponsors, you can email me at chefemily@sharpandhot.com. We love, you know, we would love the feedback to go both ways. That being said, so the other thing that I want to talk about that you and I have in common right now is that we've made some lifestyle decisions.
It's true.
Mine is that Mark and I are not buying groceries until the first day of spring, which is March 21st. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Because
you're quasi-homesteaders.
We're quasi-homesteaders, and we have a deep freezer that still has vegetables in it from the last vegetable garden. Mm-hmm. And we are about to place our seed order for this year. Now, you don't really see any of your vegetables until July. I mean, April for the asparagus, but like really the garden doesn't come in until July and August. So we still have a little bit of time where I don't feel too badly about that. But I find great comfort and great control in going grocery shopping. And I think it's because as a kid, we had like a feast or famine. My parents dealt with money in a feast or famine kind of way. And when there was money, we went grocery shopping. And mm-hmm. so it has this sense of like everything's great. And I get to buy whatever I want. And I love the grocery store, which is why I almost took a job working in one of them.
I recall. Dodge
that bullet. So the problem is that in times of stress, I go grocery shopping and I like stress buy. And I've never understood the idea of eating one's feelings before because I've always just like done the shopping part.
I understand it enough for the both of us.
I've been, you know, there are things in everyone's life that they go through, and there have been some trying times in the last month or so that I have really eaten the shit out of my feelings. So as a result, I've been going to the grocery store a lot, and we have a cabinet in our house that has a Lazy Susan built into it that it's so laden with pasta and cans of tomatoes and nut butters and grains that I can barely spin it and I can barely fit anything else on it. And there's this like, the cabinet is square, but the Lazy Susan is round. So there's in the way back, there's this triangle antechamber that I know should have been pushed off the back shelf onto.
First of all, let me just say, you said nut butter.
I did say nut butter.
It's true. One of my favorite things on earth is to go into somebody's house and make something from nothing. Like, that's how you know you're a good cook. Mm-hmm. And I went to culinary school. You went to culinary school. And like, If there's nothing else you get out of culinary school, it's the ability to make food out of whatever's in the pantry.
Yep.
And like people who don't know how to cook are amazed by it.
But you're like, how did you know to put that together?
How did you know?
You're like, well, it's probably, I don't know, it's all savory. It probably will be good. And the worst case scenario is that we haven't ruled out takeout. So if things go terribly, and right now it's all going really well because all of the shelves are still full. Like March first day of spring is March 21st. March 15th, things might be getting a little... We might be down to, like, the stale Ritz crackers,
right.
But...
Yeah. Right. You'll be out there looking for...
the first asparagus, the ramps.
The ramps. Is that... That's a little early for ramps, isn't it?
Spring... they come up with the crocuses, right?
Well, but you always get them from the West Coast first. At least around here you do.
We have a ramp patch in our yard. I will make a note to pay attention to when... We start getting them.
Actually, that's not necessarily true about the West Coast. We, in restaurants, you tend to get them from Washington, Oregon pretty early, but people find them around here around the same time. It's just less abundant.
Can I make a confession about ramps?
You don't like them.
I just don't get it. Now, wait.
It's a foodie thing. Foodies love them.
I also don't like saffron.
Foodies.
I do, which we will both confess to be, and we are looking out a window. If you haven't been to Roberta's before, there's a giant window that's part of the restaurant, and they can all look in on us. And so we have a real foodie aquarium going on right now.
And it's weird because we're both naked.
It is weird. I should have told you about the window before we decided on what we were going to wear to work today. Well, yeah, we can talk in the future. We should talk about the foodie things that I don't get. But pickled ramps are one of them. And I think that what I love is that they're a harbinger of spring, like asparagus. And like it's something that you only get in a limited time. But I can't tell you how many times I look at the jar of pickled ramps and just push it out of the way.
Thanksgiving isn't Thanksgiving until you taste pumpkin pie, right?
Mm-hmm.
For me, spring isn't spring until I've made cacio e pepe with ramps in it. Actually not cacio e pepe, but like, yeah, cacio e pepe works. Something with a little more fat to it as well.
I might just be doing it wrong. Because ramps is not something you touch on in culinary school.
Well,
All
you're doing
ramps.
Is pickling them, then, that's fine. But the only reason you do it is because you can make it last for a long time. The fresh applications are the jam. You know, that's what's really good. I have a friend who at one point was a professional pickler. And... he came to my house with just a metric fuck ton of ramps. And we're like, yeah, do whatever you want. And he was doing his R&D at our place. And he proceeded to make ramp butter and ramp paste and pickled ramps and all these things. And he made ramp vodka. And it smelled like ramps in our house for so long.
In a good way?
No. It was really bad.
You're not selling me on them.
Delicious. They're totally delicious.
Well, I'm not kidding when I tell you that there is at least one patch in our yard, maybe two. One of them's definitely under a tree, but Mark's been swearing to get out there with a chainsaw to free it up. But we have an established ramp population, so we could have like a little ramp.
We should have a ramp jam.
We'll have a ramp jam. And then we can talk about it on the radio.
Yeah.
It is 2:28. We're just about out of time.
We just started.
I told you, 30 minutes goes by like that.
I didn't get anything done. We haven't accomplished anything.
Well, what else do you want to accomplish in 2 minutes?
I don't know.
No.
It's your show.
Yeah. I don't know. We don't usually accomplish much.
We haven't saved the world yet.
We have not saved the world yet, but I hope that we made everybody's day a little bit brighter. If you have cooking questions, you can reach me at chefemily@sharpandhot.com. You can tweet me at chefemilyp. You can go to facebook.com/sharpandhot, and you can call the designated voicemail line 862-242-8599. I think I said the number wrong the last time. It's 8599, not 2599.
I'm on Twitter. I'm at @m_twang. It's pronounced Matwang, and you can see pictures of my dog, and you could see obnoxious links about the Yankees.
Awesome. Your dog's bad A, by the way. Jack. Jack's my favorite. Well, don't tell Rooster I said that. Jack's up there with Rooster. I mentioned you in the Corto Olive Oil tweet, too, so you can follow Matt. Spread the word, spread the nut butter. And until next week, thank you to Le Creuset for being a very generous sponsor. Until next Tuesday, keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website,
or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.